There have been many questions about how a business person like President-elect Donald Trump, with business dealings all over the world, will be able to deal with real and perceived conflicts of interest while in office. The Trump International Hotel in Washington, D.C. is the latest that's raising ethical questions.
The luxury hotel is built on a landmark property in downtown D.C., which the Trump Organization is leasing from the General Services Administration, the federal agency that oversees historic buildings.
The lease would effectively make the president-elect both landlord and tenant of the historic property.
With us now is Richard Painter, the former chief ethics lawyer for President George W. Bush. He's also professor of corporate law, lawyer's ethics, and government ethics at the University of Minnesota. Richard, welcome to Central Time.
Well, thank you.
Well, Richard, let's start with what laws are currently in place regarding conflicts of interest for the President of the United States?
Well, there are a wide range of laws, but probably the most important is in the Constitution itself. It's so-called the Emoluments Clause. It has a fancy name, but the word emolument comes from the Latin root monumentum, which refers to profit. This is profits and gifts from foreign governments are prohibited for anyone who holds a position of trust with the United States government. And that's what the Constitution says, and that applies to the president. Founders were very concerned about foreign governments trying to pay off our government officials, including our elected leaders. And so we would have to be very concerned if the president-elect were, for example, to have foreign diplomats staying in his hotels once he becomes president, because that's paid for by foreign government. And I hear they're competing for the more expensive suites, too. And the government of Bahrain, I hear, wants to throw a big party in a Trump hotel. And then there are some outstanding loans from the Bank of China, which is a government-owned bank, so that creates problems under the Emoluments Clause. And there are going to be quite a few other transactions that we're going to have to look at, because that is strictly prohibited. Foreign governments and companies controlling by foreign governments making payments to any official in the United States government. So that's a constitutional provision that applies to the president. We also, of course, have bribery and gratuity laws, and that's a criminal offense if they can show that you had a quid pro quo. I'll do this for you in the government if you'll do that for me. Elected officials and others are always at risk of being accused of violating the bribery statutes when people start to talk about these types of deals. I want the government to do this for my, for me, and I'll do that for your business enterprise. Well, it makes it a lot harder if you own such a business enterprise. It's a lot harder to deal with these types of accusations. They can easily come up.
Going back to the Emoluments Clause, I've read that interpreted as more of a gift than a payment. So is there some murky waters when it comes to the definition of what an emolument is in this case?
Well, there's some murkiness, but as I say, it really refers to any type of making profits off a foreign government. That's what the word means. It isn't just a gift, but of course, every business transaction, if it's particularly favorable to you, could be called a gift. But it may extend well beyond gifts and focus on, for example, we know that the Office of Legal Counsel of the Justice Department has advised that government employees cannot take professorships at German state universities and get paid for that, for example, over the summer. That would violate the Emoluments Clause of the Constitution. Certainly, the president getting payments through his hotels for entertaining foreign diplomats, I would think, would be much closer to what the clause seeks to prohibit than the teaching at a foreign university. But they've been quite strict in applying the Emoluments Clause in the past.
And Donald Trump has recently said, as of this week, that he will disentangle himself from Trump business interests. He hasn't said exactly how he's going to do that. Apparently, details will be forthcoming at a press conference sometime in December. But based on what he said so far, would that seem to address some of the biggest possible questions regarding conflicts of interest that we know about?
Well, it's unclear what he is going to do. When he first put out those tweets yesterday morning, everyone got very excited about it. CNN called me and everybody. The Office of Government Ethics was putting out tweets. This is the official United States Office of Government Ethics. They're putting out tweets saying, well, this is great. He's going to divest and sell his business, which would be great. But then people started to look a little more closely at what the president-elect was tweeting, and he was indicating that he would separate himself from the operations of the business, which means who runs it. That's not enough. He needs to sell his ownership interest in the business. We're not going to solve the emoluments clause problem, the foreign government payments problem, simply by having somebody else run the business.
So you're saying he actually needs to sell his interest in his own company?
Yes, I think he's going to have to do that. And most people who take important government positions do have to dispose of quite a lot by way of assets they sell. I worked in the Bush White House as the chief ethics lawyer. We had Hank Paulson come in as the Treasury Secretary, and he had to sell some $100 million worth of Goldman Sachs stock. And he got the cash and invested in conflict-free assets like U.S. Treasury bonds and mutual funds. So a lot of people sell a lot of assets when they enter into public service, and that's well known to be part of the cost of public service, that you may have to make some adjustments in your financial position. So you can do your job free of conflict of interest.
We're talking with ethics lawyer Richard Painter right now from the University of Minnesota, taking a look now at conflict of interest concerns raised by Donald Trump's business ventures and holdings when he becomes president in January. And looking now at the Trump children, it looks like the Trump's grown children are going to be three of them taking over the business in large part. And then, on the other hand, we still have, for instance, Ivanka Trump sitting in on meetings with foreign officials, the Prime Minister of Japan. So there is still some sort of overlap, it seems like, between politics and business. What do you make of that area?
Well, that's what I was concerned about all along. I never thought the plan worked very well to have the children run the business, and then he would still own the business. As I just explained, all the conflicts of interest. If he owns the business. And now we were told that the children run the business, well, he runs the government, and that's not the way it's working out. The children are showing up at the official meetings of the transition teams, going around with the president-elect to his meetings with foreign government dignitaries, and very much involved in some of these decisions about who's going to be a cabinet official and all that. It seems to me the children are very much involved with the government side of things. Well, that's not the original plan, which is the children run the business and he's going to run the country. So we're getting a lot of confusion coming out of the transition team about who is going to be doing what and exactly what they're going to do with these business interests so he can be conflict-free as a president.
Now, you were on board when George W. Bush was in the White House. What ethics standards did you apply then? And we could do a little compare and contrast. What do you expect that to look like against a Trump presidency?
Well, George W. Bush was a lot easier for the president because his financial holdings were a lot of mutual funds and treasury securities and bank accounts. He had a little bit of an interest left over from the Texas Rangers, but you know, a baseball team doesn't create a lot of conflict of interest with the work you do at the Oval Office. So that'd be much easier to manage. I think that a closer comparison to someone like Donald Trump would be someone like Hank Paulson, the Treasury Secretary, because he was the chairman of Goldman Sachs, and he had hundreds of millions of dollars worth of Goldman Sachs stock. And that was a major transaction that we had to orchestrate. We worked with the Goldman Sachs General Counsel's office, you know, figured out a good way to sell those shares into the market without disrupting the market and get him a good price for them. And there's a tax benefit. You don't have to pay a capital gains tax if you sell something because of the ethics lawyer tells you you have to sell it. So we did the paperwork for that. It involves some effort. You certainly don't get to keep your Goldman Sachs stock if you want to be the Treasury Secretary. You don't get to keep your Trump business empire if you become president of the United States, or you shouldn't. But that doesn't mean you lose everything. You sell it, you get cash. And I think if it's worth what he says it's worth, he'll clear a couple of billion, and I think that's enough for the kids to get a good start in life.
And just briefly, there was a school that George W. Bush was going to have named after him, and I understand you put that on hold until he was out of the office. And then you look on the other hand, Donald Trump, he is a real estate magnate. He's got his name on most of his buildings already. How do you look at that sort of scenario?
Yes, I recall inquiries about, you know, should we name this, you know, a public school or something after George W. Bush. I think the feeling in the White House is really prefer not to have that going on until the president's out of office, even though, of course, he doesn't get any money when people name a public school after him. But, you know, the naming game goes on when you've left office for a wide range of reasons. But certainly you would not want to have any president who's receiving money for putting his name up on a building. We don't just send checks into the White House so we can put the name Obama on top of our office tower or whatever. You know, that's just not appropriate for the president. And if we have those names on buildings the president's name on a building outside the United States, we can get into some security risks. We put, you know, the Obama Tower in downtown, you know, Paris or Johannesburg or something. I mean, that's just asking for some problems. And we, you know, the president doesn't do that when he's in office. And I think that President Trump, when he becomes president, needs to, you know, make sure that he assures the American people he's not going to be doing that.
We're talking about the conflict of interest concerns raised by Donald Trump's business ventures and holdings when he becomes president in January. Our guest is Richard Painter, professor at the University of Minnesota and former chief ethics lawyer under George W. Bush.
And we'd like to hear from you at 800-642-1234. What's your take on the ethical questions raised by Donald Trump's business interests? Should a sitting president be allowed to continue running business ventures or owning a major business, maybe operated by his family, while he is running the government? What questions do you have? Is this a worry for you, or is this something you knew going in? You're not too worried. You think it'll be worked out okay? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're continuing our review of ethical concerns raised by Donald Trump's business ventures, in particular the Trump International Hotel in downtown D.C., which is standing on property he's leasing from one of the federal agencies he'll be in charge of as a president.
You can join in at 800-642-1234. What are your concerns? What are your questions about possible overlap between business interests and national interests? A worry, not a worry for you? Call in now, 800-642-1234, or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Let's take a first caller now. We've got Frank on the line in Door County. Frank, hi.
Hi. My question is, the gentleman, in your position, how do you hold someone accountable to do what is ethically seen as correct, as proper? You mentioned George W. Bush. George H.W. Bush, I know, divested himself, as did President Clinton, President Obama. What recourse does the government have in relationship to the President of the United States to act in such a responsible way that you're saying that they need to subscribe to?
Frank, thanks for that. And Richard, whose job is it to hold the president accountable?
Well, that's going to involve a range of different actors, depending on the circumstances. The Emoluments Clause is in the Constitution, and so if you get a president who's taking substantial foreign payments, they're in violation of the Constitution, that's a situation where the House of Representatives would want to think about having a hearing and find out what was going on. And whether it was indeed in violation of the Constitution and whether the president intended to stop it. And if not, then that's where you might have to think about proceeding toward impeachment if it was a substantial amount of money. I don't think they're going to impeach the president for accepting a $600 or $700 gift from foreign government on a one-time basis and refusing to give it back. But here we could be talking about quite a lot of money. So That has to be sorted out. I think that ought to be sorted out before the Electoral College votes. We should have a guarantee from Mr. Trump that he's not going to be in violation of the Constitution on day one. You know, the other problems, it depends on the circumstances. If he owns these businesses and people start talking about quid pro quos and, well, if you want this from us, you're going to get rid of those nasty windmills near the golf courses. If there's too much of that type of discussion going on, you could end up with investigations of bribery, soliciting bribes, and so forth. And we do not want that at all. And so that I think that's the reason you ought to sell the business, so we don't get into those discussions. And, of course, you know, if we had any unfortunate incidents abroad with those buildings he has his name on, you know, the hearings that would come out of that would make this Benghazi thing look like nothing. And I really hope we'd never have to go through any type of a tragedy with respect to a property abroad that we're unable to protect or a foreign government is unable to protect, and that it gets attacked simply because it has a name on it.
Frank, thanks a lot for that question. And next we're going to go to Douglas in Waukesha. Douglas, hi.
Hi, and thank you for taking my call. I believe the professor is reading the clause extremely narrowly. It would be difficult to argue that a business transaction where one party receives goods or services and pays for those goods or services would be the equivalent of, you know, attempting to bribe a government official. It's just, that's not what the clause is meant to protect. And there are specific laws that do address conflict of interest for a number of government employees. He mentioned the Secretary of Commerce, for example. That's because there are laws that do address the conflict of interest, because the Secretary of Commerce can have direct impact on the stock market and on Goldman Sachs' shares. Everything the president does impacts every aspect of the United States. It's too difficult to write laws that would prevent the president from being in a conflict of interest. That's why there are no direct laws towards it. I guess I do have a question. Would the professor be satisfied with a token divestor of President-elect Trump's interests worldwide? Because to truly sell off all of his interests, the professor must understand would take years, if not decades.
Douglas, thanks a lot for that. A couple of points there. One, he thinks you're reading the Emoluments Clause too narrowly. Two, it'll take too long to divest. What do you say?
The Emoluments Clause is not about quid pro quos at all. It's just about receiving certain payments from foreign governments. And it's not just limited to gifts. It has been interpreted by the Office of Legal Counsel of the Justice Department to prohibit even the professorship at a German state university with a stated salary, for example, for a State Department employee. So it has been interpreted quite broadly you know, by the Justice Department, and it does apply to the president. So a broad range of these transactions, I think, would be evaluated under the Emoluments Clause by the Justice Department, and it could be determined to be in violation, particularly if there's added value going to the president-elect. But when you look at the real meaning of the clause, it's about people making profit from foreign governments and from dealing with foreign governments.
And I'm going to jump in. We have a question I want to make sure we get to. Let's go to Willem in Colfax. Willem, hi. If you could be brief, please.
Yes, I think that Mr. Trump has a rather imperial view of the presidency, but my comment was about his business interest in this pipeline that's currently a big controversy in North Dakota. And part of the controversy is also with the Sioux Nations saying that the land that wasn't ceded and that it's in violation of the U.S. treaty, or there was never a treaty about that land. And all these issues seem like they would create a huge conflict of interest for the president, who has financially interested in this pipeline, and then the Sioux Nation's claim.
And the AP, the Associated Press, has said President-elect Donald Trump holds stock in the company building the disputed Dakota Access oil pipeline. And Richard, what do you say to that?
Well, it's just one of the many conflicts of interest that's going to come up if he doesn't sell the businesses. And many American families who own businesses, very large, successful businesses, decide to sell them by taking them public. There are a wide range of selling of options for selling businesses in the United States. We have deep capital markets that could be used for that purpose. And I'm sure there are plenty of good investment bankers in New York who make this work out for Donald Trump, if that's what he wants to do. But he's got to focus on being president. And, you know, by way of analogy, I ask, where would we be if President Franklin Roosevelt had had a Roosevelt Tower downtown Berlin in the 1930s and a big loan outstanding from Deutsche Bank? And then we were in a situation of having to figure out what we're going to do to stand up to a foreign dictator. The president needs to be free of conflicts of interest so he can do his job and be a good president. And I think Donald Trump can do that if he gets rid of these business holdings. He can sell them. I think he can get a good price if he says what they're worth, what he says they are, and then go about the business of being president.
And we leave it there. Richard, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thank you.
That was Richard Painter, former chief ethics lawyer for President George W. Bush. He's also professor of corporate law, lawyers' ethics, and government ethics at the University of Minnesota.